You're listening to the Big Sports Radio Network with Larry Smith, Mike Kegley, and Brad Sturdy.
Cole Thompson, always entertaining, always great insights with SEC Unfiltered. Good friend of the show. Back with us again, Cole. Good to see you. Happy New Year. First time we've talked here in 2025. Things are going well.
The only down part about 2025 is now I actually have to work. I have to follow the storylines. I have to follow what's going on in the world of college football. I have to come up with content ideas. That's always the downside of whenever the season comes to a close. And then I get to hear people complain for the next 8 months. Oh, I miss college football. Well, you were just complaining about the national championship. So what is it? Which are you going to complain about this time?
Exactly. Well, now it's done. Ohio State doing what we thought they could have done for several years. That is one at all. Money will buy you. May not buy you happiness, but it'll buy you championships. But take nothing away. The Buckeyes, they look like the best team all through the playoffs, and they come out at the end as champions.
Larry, I'm not going to lie. I think that this might be one of the more deserving teams in the history of a national championship, because you got to realize it's not that Ohio State won against a qualified Notre Dame team. Their path to the postseason completely differs than most rosters that we've seen in the past. It's a 12-team playoff, so they didn't get that first round bye, which means they had to play four games against four opponents that were viewed in the College Football Playoff Committee's eyes as worthy of competing for a national championship: Tennessee, Oregon, Texas, and then Notre Dame. On top of that, they also played two teams that were in the College Football Playoff during the regular season and won both of them in sporadic fashion against Penn State and Indiana. So really, outside of that one bad performance against Michigan and a one-point loss to Oregon, nobody really could doubt this team. They were well put together. They were a finely tuned, oiled roster. And more importantly, when they played their version of football, they looked unbeatable. Most teams are lucky to have a Carnell Tate as a wide receiver one. He's wide receiver three on this team. Most teams are lucky to have a guy like a Proctor come on in and be able to fill in at right tackle. Most guys are lucky to have a guy that's able to play in Donovan Jackson from left guard and move out to left tackle and not miss a beat for 6 weeks of action and then still have a stable offensive line and the ability to play with four different pitches. They really felt like the ace of a college football lineup, because think about this. They could win with defense. They could win with offense. They could win with special teams. They could win with the run game. They could win with the passing attack. They were great on third down. They did everything necessary to be able to prove that they belong in the national championship. And more importantly, punch their ticket to winning it all. So there's no doubt, in my opinion, that when you look at this Ohio State team and the history and long term of college football, they will be historically remembered for what they were able to accomplish en route to getting to Atlanta.
You know, and Cole, I think that one thing about this Ohio State team, when we got through the first round of games and none were really that competitive, you know, the feeling was maybe there aren't 12 teams out. Maybe there aren't 16 teams out there. But I think the way Ohio State played as the eighth seed under this current format, the way that they ran the table and the style that they did, gives credence to this new look that, no, you if you have more teams in there, you get a team like that, that maybe something happened in the final week that drops them and they're not going to be one of the top four seeds, et cetera, but they're still worthy to win a national title. It's sort of, in my mind, I think it verified that the 12-team playoff is a good thing.
Look, if you're one of people like me who thinks that the 12-team playoff is a joke, then you now have to eat crow, because of in a 12-team playoff, in a 14 playoff format, the best team in college football would not be in it. And by the way, Notre Dame, who also played for the national championship, at best would have been the four seed. And that's hoping that a lot of other things went their way and they were able to punch their ticket because of somebody else messed up in the final buzzer. So that's where we can say that a 12-team playoff does benefit. I think the other thing is we aren't going to see 12 teams ever be qualified to win a national title. What we're going to have to see, though, is better matchups to qualify it. And we're going to see the transition where instead of having the top four seeds get automatic buys because you won your conference championship, they're going to pick the top four teams, which then will allow us to have more enticing matchups in the first round and also different locations that we never imagined. Like, think about Boise State hosting SMU in the middle of December. That's an awesome matchup, but because of they won their conference and they were a higher ranked team than most of the other teams that were runner-ups, they get a first round bye. Imagine having a Tennessee having to travel down to Tempe, Arizona to play against the Sun Devils in that blistering heat in Arizona. Like, that's a fun matchup, but Arizona got the first round bye because they were the higher conference champion. So those are going to be things that we're going to see change. We know that they're talking about expanding to 14 teams. They're also probably talking about automatic qualifiers for the Big Ten and the SEC. Here's the thing, Larry. I understand why people are going to say that's unfair when it comes to the ACC and the Big 12, other programs getting more revenue. But at the end of the day, this is a money game. and the money comes from the Big Ten and the money comes from the SEC, they're going to want more representation. And whenever somebody goes to bat and says, why did you leave out a 10-2 BYU? Go ahead and show the show Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey. Here's the annual revenue that we bring in the month of October. Here's the annual revenue you bring in the entire college football season. That's why we have four and you have two.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no question about that. I want to talk about, you know, the Big Ten now at back-to-back championships of the SEC wasn't in the title game either of the last couple of years. Is that a concern for SEC teams, or is it simply that these things go in cycles? And number two, NIL, the transfer portal, has kind of evened out the talent now in this. What are your thoughts in terms of the SEC after such dominance the past decade and a half, not being there on the final game?
Guy, you're trying to hurt me, aren't you, Larry?
No, I'm not. I'm going to get you honest. But listen, you're the guy that I know you look at this, and I want to get your thoughts. Because everyone said, oh my God, SEC. I'm like, well, it's just 2 years. And you can't tell me that you come back next year, you won't have a Georgia or an Alabama or a Texas in the championship game.
So let's start off with this. Number one, congratulations to the Big Ten on finally being able to firmly plant yourself as an actual threat to the SEC. Because now we have actual evidence. So good for you on that. Number two, just because we're talking about this with the SEC, we're also forgetting this is going to affect the Big Ten. Because if everyone wants to focus in on how Alabama's losing players to the transfer portal and the NIL collective is stealing players from Georgia and LSU and they're going to smaller programs, well, last I checked, they're also doing that at Michigan. Last I checked, they're also doing that at Ohio State. They're doing that at Oregon. They're doing that at USC. They're doing that at other premier programs that have all the resources and abundances in the world that say, hey, we're going to go to another school. So what we're going to see is more parity. And that's the thing that I think Big Ten fans are trying to not comprehend, but they're going to have to start learning pretty quickly. Yeah, you're not going to see Alabama make the college football playoff every single year. The dynasty run of Nick Saban is dead. But you know what? It's been dead since 2020. That Saban team in 2023 was flawed beyond belief. The Georgia team this past year was flawed beyond belief, yet they still won a Big Ten title, an SEC title, and made it to the college football playoff as the number two seed. You're going to start seeing more South Carolinas, more Missouris, more Ole Misses fight their way into the 12-team college football playoff scenario. But you're also going to see more Illinois fight their way into the college football playoff scenario, more Indianas. You're going to see a team like Michigan State every once in a blue moon be able to get a 10-win season, or a Washington make the jump on in. So that's the new thing. What's going to really be interesting is the development of talent at these major institutions, because in years past, the thing that you felt so confident in was the depth. You felt really good about having a five-star offensive tackle that was only going to play for 1 year and then become a first-round draft pick sitting and waiting behind an All-American. Well, now he's playing at South Carolina because he can start day one. Now he's playing at Rutgers because he can start day one. So what are you doing when it comes to the attestment of guys that you're transitioning from literally high school that are going to have to be plug-and-play starters almost instantly, or at least quality backups to where if a starter goes down, you know that you're not missing a beat? That's what I'm really paying attention to with these major institutions. I don't think the SEC is dead. They have a track record of a two-decade-long run. And I get it. The Big Ten is now going to even the playing field. But a lot of people are saying even the playing field. You got to even the playing field by also admitting it's no longer just the big guns in the Big Ten and the SEC. It's the little guys that are every few years going to make noise in route to going to the college football playoff.
And you mentioned the other teams. One of the better games, better bowl games this season was the South Carolina Illinois game, the Citrus Bowl. That was just 60 minutes of pure fun. I don't care which team you root for. It was just great drama. The sideline stuff with Bielema and Beamer, that was fun. You know, I mean, I think it was a showcase for two of the teams that, to your point, will likely start preseason top 15, at the very lowest top 20, and will be contenders to be those third or fourth teams out of those conferences to get into the 12-team playoff in 2025.
Larry, I'm not going to lie to you, and I'm not sure if you saw my way too early rankings that way you brought this up. I have Illinois at number 10 and South Carolina at number 11. That's how highly I think of both the Fighting War Chickens and the Fighting Brett Bielemas. They're in a great spot for next season, especially with what's returning on the roster, how much veteran talent they have, what they've been able to bring in the portal. And here's the thing about a place like Illinois and a place like South Carolina. They're never going to draw in the national reviews of the players that they target in the portal. You're never going to see the Eric Singletons or the Casey Concepciones be headliners out there, or a five-star quarterback is going to commit. Like, the Spencer Rattler thing was weird at the time, but Spencer Rattler was damaged goods by most people. But you talk to those in the industry, the scouting department, every single thing I have heard is the players that South Carolina added in, like Gabriel Brownlow Dindy and Brandon Cisse from NC State, they're fits for the culture. And when you have fits for the culture and you can transition extremely quickly, that leads to you having better results. And the same thing goes for Illinois. They love the wide receiver they brought in from West Virginia. They love that they have some stable offensive line play. Luke Altmaier's back for another year. I could see both these teams being college football playoff dark horses. And I mean dark horses as in making it to the semifinals. They're really well put together going into 2025.
Yeah. And to your point, culture too, both these teams kind of mirror images. Neither have a ton of recent success. I think both teams were vying for their 10th or their fifth 10 win season ever.
Illinois. Yeah. 2001, last time Illinois had a 10 win season.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and South Carolina was kind of a similar thing. So yeah, it's fun. But to your point, I think that's what makes this era fun, is you have some fresh blood there. The playing field's open. You know, we used to, it was only two teams, four teams. Now it's 12. And so if you've got program guys like Bielema, like Shane Beamer, to build the culture, like you said, and build toward that, they could be among those teams in the years to come. Cole, always great to talk with you. Happy New Year to you. Good luck finding those storylines, but we trust that you will do that. That's why we're always paying attention to you.
Oh, believe me, I will find stuff to talk about. You give me a microphone, you give me an hour, I'll turn it into magic.
There you go. And that you will. No question, my friend. Cole Thompson from SEC Unfiltered. Thanks so much, man. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime. Take care, guys.
All right. Take care. Much more to come. After this.
How would you like to get a free $100 prepaid MasterCard and save money on your television bill? Then call right now. Make the switch to Dish TV. For a limited time, we're offering a 2-year price guarantee. That's important for those of you on a fixed budget to know your prices won't go up for 2 years. Plus, you have hundreds of channels, lots of live news and sports, movies, and more. And when you call right now, you can also ask about our discounts for seniors and those of you in the military. So, make the switch to Dish right now. Pick up the phone and call. Enjoy your television like you are meant to. And when you sign up today, we'll also give you a $100 free prepaid MasterCard. Call right now, ask about our senior discount, our military discount, and your free $100 prepaid MasterCard.
800-706-7063. 800-706-7063. 800-706-7063. That's 800-706-7063. Paid for by NPS. Switch to Dish TV today for your free prepaid MasterCard.
I'm still early in the conference season, but we're kind of four teams that separated themselves off. Obviously, Michigan State at the top, Michigan, Purdue, and then Illinois, kind of probably the best of that next tier with three losses entering the week. Let's get back to our friend Rob Blackman. He's a veteran play-by-play man for Purdue basketball. Big game Friday night against Michigan. But first, let's talk about a couple of nights ago. What happened against Ohio State? Again, one of those things that it's the Big Ten. Anything can happen at any time. Or Purdue, the big lead, but second half, it was a different story there.
Yeah, it was. And really, Larry, it wasn't just the second half. It was the last 10 seconds of the first half, which it kind of sounds funny to think about it that way. But Purdue had done a great job all game, all of the first half, I should say, on Bruce Thornton, the leading scorer for Ohio State, had held him scoreless. And then he gets open for three. The final shot of the first half, he made that three. Then he comes out, very first shot of the second half is a three-point shot. He makes that one, and all of a sudden he's off and running. So you look back at those final 10 seconds of the first half, and you say, man, if we don't allow him to get his head up, then maybe Ohio State doesn't get things cooking in the second half. But, boy, to have a 16-point lead with 10 seconds to go in the first half, and then you start the second half and Ohio State goes on a 17-2 run, and Purdue was swimming upstream the rest of the game. So tip of the cap to Ohio State. And as you said, this is the Big Ten. Man, you just never know. Ohio State, that was their fifth. This is crazy to think about, Larry. That was their fifth straight game, all Big Ten games, that had been decided on the final possession of the game. And two of those had gone into overtime.
Wow.
So welcome to the Big Ten this year, where it's very competitive and literally you never know what you're going to see night in and night out. So tough loss for Purdue. You hate losing a home game, but as you said, Friday night on to Michigan.
Yeah. Big game for Ohio State. And obviously a team that we saw knock off Kentucky and New York a few weeks ago. So they've got the skills to take on anybody any given night. And as you said, Bruce Thornton, one of the better players in the Big Ten, if he gets going, you know, it's tough for the opponent. But to Friday night now, Michigan and Purdue, look, you know, the Wolverines, one of these teams that Dusty May doing what he thought he might up there, and that is, you know, rejuvenized, put some juice back into this program right now. And he's done that here in the first couple of months of the season.
Yeah, he really has. And he's gone about it, you know, in a pretty interesting way. It's not all transfers. You know, sometimes that's how it works out. You just, especially with a new coach, you're going to bring in a whole bunch of new guys and try to do it your way. And certainly Vlad Golden is one of those transfers that is helping, who came with him from Florida Atlantic, and certainly so is Joe Wolf, who transferred from Yale. But they've got, you know, they got a couple guys who are holdovers. You know, Namari Burnett is a guy that's really helped him. Will Cheddar helping him off the bench, who's a guy who's a holdover. They did bring in Roddy Gale Jr. from Ohio State as a transfer. So that has helped. But yeah, he's just a really good job of just kind of, you know, mixing all the parts together and making it work. The one thing I probably really like the most about them is they're really balanced across the board. Five different guys averaging double figure scoring. Golden gets 16 a game and Burnett gets 10 a game. And there are three other guys right in between those. So they're doing it with a lot of different folks. And again, good job by Dusty May of coming in here and finding a way to make it work with not just a whole bunch of transfers, but some holdovers from last year too.
Yeah, there's no question. You look at what he's done there. You know, another player that he did not bring from FAU, couldn't get through admissions and whatever, was John L. Davis, went to Arkansas, where it has not gone well for him. And we'll discuss that in the part of the show here, but you're exactly right. Talk about this Purdue team right now. Here's a team that without Zach Edey, the National Player of the Year, back-to-back years, there were some skeptics that wondered, is Purdue that good without Zach Edey, you know, who just was a unicorn there in the middle doing, you know, a huge start to the NBA career. But you guys have done that. The Boilers have done that.
Yeah. And credit to Matt Painter and that coaching staff. Look, Purdue had to kind of rethink itself a little bit. Purdue still has stayed true to its, you know, its core self. Purdue still throws the ball inside every single time. I mean, that's what Matt Painter does. And he will never veer away from that. Purdue's always going to throw the ball inside. And it just happens to be Trey Kaufman Wren. He was 6'9". That's the guy that's the recipient of all those passes now, instead of the guy last year who was 7'4" and Zach Edey. The one thing Purdue has changed an awful lot from their offensive attack mode anyway, is instead of posting up on the low block the way Purdue has done so much in the past and throwing that ball into the paint that way, Purdue's gone a lot more to that high ball screen with a short roll, where the center, in this case Trey Kaufman Wren, is catching the ball right at the free throw line or maybe slightly below the free throw line, and then he's able to use his skill set to get to the basket because he's much better ball handler than certainly Zach Edey ever was. So that's changed a little bit. But again, Purdue still throws the ball inside because that's what Purdue does. And I think they'll do that at least as long as Matt Painter is the head coach there. But look, it doesn't hurt, you know, when you have Braden Smith as your point guard. Zach was so good last year. A lot of folks just kind of seem to forget that Braden Smith was first team all Big Ten last year. Braden Smith was the preseason Big Ten player of the year coming into this year. And you know this, Larry, they always say, especially the college game, if you have a good guard, you always have a chance, and Purdue has a great one in Braden Smith. So that has helped immensely to have him coming back off of that team last year and at least really solidifying the backcourt for Purdue.
Talking with Rob Blackman, he's a veteran play-by-play man for the Purdue Boilermakers, taking on Michigan Friday night. And you talk about Braden Smith, and we've talked before about his maturation last year. He had a fantastic freshman year, but he was still a freshman. But learn from that. You saw that growth last year, and now a leader as a junior, to your point. When we look at around this Big Ten right now, Michigan already will be the seventh ranked team that Purdue will play. That's just life in the Big Ten right now. Still four more ranked teams on the schedule. Michigan again, Wisconsin, and then later you're at Michigan State and finish at Illinois. Talk about this in terms of just the juggernaut. The Big Ten's always tough, but it feels like even with expansion now, it's not like you've expanded with four so-so programs. You've got some other teams that, if they're not ranked, are going to prove to be a real challenge for you when you do get them on the court.
Yeah, and I would say just look back to Tuesday night. UCLA beats Wisconsin at UCLA. Purdue did beat Oregon last weekend on a Saturday, but that was a very difficult game against an Oregon team that's ranked 13th in the country. From what I've seen, Larry, and the good news for Purdue in the pre-conference schedule Boilermakers played a whole bunch of SEC teams. I felt like we were kind of competing in the SEC for a little bit. But one thing I have seen, that SEC is loaded. They are easily the best conference in all of the nation, and I don't think there's any argument there. They have some great teams, starting with Auburn, who really had their way with Purdue back in December in a game played in Birmingham. As I look at the Big Ten, now that it's really kind of started to take shape here in mid-January, I don't see any great teams in the Big Ten like the SEC has, but I see a lot of really good teams, and that makes for some great competitive balance across the board. And just if you go back to, I would say, even just midweek last week, and look at all the Big Ten games that have gone into overtime or have come down to the final shot. I was just mentioning Ohio State, five straight games that came down to a one possession game. If you look across the board, that's basically how the entire Big Ten schedule is going right now. All of these games, all is maybe being a little hyperbole, but about 75-80% of these games are always coming down to the final shot or an overtime session or, you know, the final play of the game, whatever it might be, one possession game. I attribute that to the fact that the Big Ten has a lot of really good teams. No one great team. Last year, Purdue was the one great team. You know, last year, Purdue just ran away and hit when it comes to winning the Big Ten championship. They were 17-3 in the Big Ten. In a lot of ways, made it look easy. I don't think there's anybody in the Big Ten this year going to make it look easy. You're going to have a whole bunch of teams right there, competitive, right to the end. It's great for the fans. I don't know, Larry, if the coaches really are enjoying this part of it. they're probably a little extra stress put on their plate. But from a fan standpoint, I mean, oh my gosh, how entertaining it's been. And I don't see that changing. I think it's going to be that way right up till the end.
Yeah. And I really think, to me, I like Purdue and Illinois going into March because of what you mentioned. They played this very strong SEC schedule. Like you said, Purdue beating Alabama there at Mackey earlier in the year, beating Ole Miss, losing to Texas A&M neutral court, and then Auburn a neutral court down in Atlanta. But Illinois did the same thing, losing to Alabama on a neutral court, beating Arkansas on a neutral court, and then losing the buzzer beaters you mentioned against Tennessee, and they'll get Duke next month. So those are the two teams I think have really gone out, not just scheduled tough opponents, but scheduled some elite opponents outside of conference. And I think they're two coaches. I mean, you know, Tom Izzo knows what he's doing as well. That understand that, you know, let's get that litmus test and see how we're doing, not just in the Big Ten, but looking beyond mid-March and trying to get to the end of March in the way they kind of put the schedule together to test their teams.
And that's what Matt Painter has done the last couple of years. And so much of this, Larry, and you know this, so much of it can really be directly attributed to the fact of, do you have a veteran coach who's comfortable in his skin? And if so, you're okay with scheduling a really difficult schedule. You don't mind losing games like Auburn and Texas A&M in December because, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to make you better for your Big Ten schedule. Younger coaches some way, you know, they often kind of, they shy away from those more difficult out-of-conference schedules because they don't want to suffer the losses. You know, they think it hurts their team from either a psyche standpoint or, quite frankly, maybe reflects poorly on them as a coach. Guys like Matt Painter, guys like Brad Underwood, hey, they've been there, done that. They're not worried about their team psyche. They're not worried about what the fans are going to think about, you know, their coaching style. They're going to go out and schedule really difficult teams. And if they lose, so be it. Because at the end of the day, and I've heard Coach Painter talk about this 1,000 times, at the end of the day, when it comes to NCAA tournament seeding, you're not going to get dinged for a loss to Auburn in Birmingham. Right. That's not a bad loss. It's a great loss, actually. It probably helps you in the long run. You're not going to get dinged for a neutral site loss, a neutral court loss to Texas A&M when it comes to seed lines in the NCAA tournament. Now, where you are going to get dinged is if you go into the NCAA tournament selection Sunday and you've won 22, 23 games, but, you know, 10, 11, 12 of those have come against quad three opponents or quad four opponents. That right. never helps you. So right. why not schedule the best schedule you can possibly play and ultimately knowing that it's going to help you in two ways. One, get you better for the Big Ten season. And two, help you when it comes to NCAA tournament seeding.
Yeah, I agree. And the third thing, too, helps you in terms of from a PR standpoint. You know, I mean, I look at
sure.
You know, Saturday afternoon, I'm looking for a good matchup. I'm locked on as a fan to watching Purdue and Auburn. Thanksgiving Day, I'm watching Illinois and Arkansas after the NFL game. You know, I mean,
right,
audiences, where you've got more eyes than just those in the Midwest watching you. There's no question. Rob, always good to talk with you. Good luck Friday night with Michigan and rest of the way. We'll catch up with you later on this season.
Okay, Larry, thank you.
All right, my friend. Thanks so much. Rob Blackman, once again, play-by-play man for the Purdue Boilermakers, taking on Michigan. And again, as always, a very good schedule coming up, as Purdue will be one of those teams right there in the thick of things in the Big Ten chase. Stay with us. We've got more to come.
You're listening to the Big Sports Radio Network with Larry Smith, Mike Pinkley, and Brett Stewart.
David Cobb, he's one of the fantastic sports writers, college sports writers for CBS Sports, friend of the show, always good to get his insights, and joins us now today. David, good to see you. Let's first off say congratulations. You're a daddy for the first time. How are things treating you?
Yeah, it's been great. My little daughter's been watching a lot of college basketball over the first couple months of her life. A little bit of college football, too. So we're indoctrinating her early on the ways of life in a sports household. So it's been good.
That's awesome. We did the same thing with ours. So congratulations. That's very cool. Well, I know you've got a chance in between feedings and changings to watch some college basketball. One thing I think for any fan to look at this is you take a 30,000 square foot view, 30,000 foot view from up high, is that right now, there are a lot of teams that could make a run for the Final Four. I mean, we were talking the other day that you could almost take anybody in the top 25, make an argument that they have the talent, at least to get to San Antonio.
Yeah, without a doubt. The well of Final Four contenders is deep. I don't even know if you can put a cap on it, put a limit on it at this point. Now, that group of actual national title contenders, I think, is a good bit narrower. And it's like, well, what's the difference? Final Four team versus national champion team. Well, history shows us, there's a pretty good chance that we could end up with a 9 seed in the Final Four, a 6 seed, whatever. It's a lot less likely that you get somebody from that range who actually wins the national championship. I mean, you got your Kevin Ollier at UConn that comes to mind, but those are pretty rare. So, yeah, I think in terms of Final Four, it's wide open, parity reigns. Boy, you look at the top and it kind of feels like there's a little group there that's starting to separate itself. And, I'm curious to see whether or not our national champion comes from that cream de la cream upper echelon.
Yeah, one of the teams I think is interesting is Duke. Not surprising to see them in the top five. But my concern for Duke, I think, moving forward is that unlike Duke's teams of the past, this ACC is not your typical ACC. You've got only a couple of teams in the top 25. They can run the table here without a lot of pushback. Will they be a team ready for a Final Four national championship bid, having not really been tested? The ACC tournament, you may get some. They've got Illinois next month. That'll be a good game in New York. That's another kind of Final Four contender. Do they have what it takes to get there? I guess that's the one thing. It's almost like watching a Gonzaga team of recent years.
That's exactly what I was going to say. The ACC is like the WCC this year. Yeah. That's insulting, but it's true. That league is down. I mean, look at Louisville, what they're doing. They're kind of making it interesting and giving a little bit of buzz, a little bit of aptitude to that league. But by and large, the conference is as bad as it's ever been. And so Duke is just sleepwalking through these teams. No, I shouldn't say they're sleepwalking. They're playing great basketball. They're obliterating these teams. And there's something to be said for that when night in, night out, you come in as a heavy favorite, massive talent advantage. And for the most part, you take care of business. I mean, they let Notre Dame get back into that game a couple of weeks ago, and that one got interesting. But aside from that, it's mainly been Duke just blowing people out. But does that serve you well come the postseason, come the NCAA tournament, when you're likely to end up in close games? The likelihood of you running the table in the NCAA tournament with 6 straight double-digit victories like UConn has been able to do the last couple of seasons, that's low. I mean, that's rare. The run of dominance that we've seen from UConn is unprecedented in terms of NCAA tournament, game-by-game margin of victory. I don't know that we can just assume that Duke just goes out there and does that. So if you get into March, you haven't played a single-digit game, maybe only 1 or 2 single-digit games in the last 2.5 months. Yeah, I think it could hurt them. It absolutely could, because the level of competition will be far greater in the NCAA tournament than what they've seen day in, day out in the ACC. That could be a problem. So they look great. They are phenomenally talented. I think John Shire is doing an awesome job. But I'm always going to have my doubts in this era about a team that's led by freshmen in that sort of pressure cooker environment of the NCAA tournament.
We just haven't seen it. You think about it, the last freshman-led team was the Duke team of 10 years ago, 2015, right? Since then, it's been a shift. Mm-hmm. Veteran players coming in. We've seen, you're right, in what UConn did the last couple of years, it's just been totally different. I want to get to the ACC, or I'm sorry, the SEC a little bit. We've got Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee kind of all right there. In your mind right now, which team is the best? Obviously, Auburn ranked number one. And who comes out of this scrum? It's been exciting to watch these teams kind of battle it out here the past few weeks.
Yeah, to me, it's Auburn atop the heap. And they've continued to win even without Jahni Broome, who, when he got injured, was the betting favorite for National Player of the Year. So the fact that they've been able to continue humming even without a guy of that caliber is really impressive. So when he gets back, it makes them all the better. They're the one team that I look at in the SEC and think they could maybe escape with fewer than five losses in conference play. That league is so tough that it feels to me as though almost everybody's going to end up with five losses or more in the conference. Auburn's the one team that I look at and I think, okay, I could see them going 14-4 or 15-3, you know, something along those lines, because they're that deep. They're just explosive, so hard to contain. They get you in a spin cycle, and before you know it, you're looking at the wrong side of a 16-0 run. They got a really electric freshman guard there in Tahad Pettiford, who's capable of going off and sort of that infusion of elite level talent that sometimes you need to get over the championship hump. So I like Auburn. I think this might be Bruce Pearl's best team, which is really saying something now, because he's had it going there on the Plains now for a minute and has had a Final Four team, had some other really high caliber teams. But especially if Jahni Broome's able to come back healthy, yeah, I think Auburn is that one rung above the rest of the SEC contenders.
On the other end, there's Arkansas and John Calipari. And right now, everyone's wondering what's going on. As we talk earlier in the week, 0-5, you know, this is a team that for Kentucky fans, people who've watched Kentucky, Arkansas looks like Kentucky South. It's just not kind of the same system. What happens in Arkansas now? I mean, the five-year contract, the massive NIL money, there've got to be some folks down in Fayetteville that are not happy about this.
Yeah, an insult to injury this week, news that Boogie Fland will miss the rest of the season. I mean, he's their second leading scorer. He's their leading assist man, one of their few competent outside shooters. And now you're going to be dealing with, you know, without him, which means DJ Wagner's going to have to play more on the ball. You're going to need to get more out of John L. Davis. There's a real chance that Arkansas could go, 4-14, 5-13 in the league? Yeah. I mean, they haven't won a game yet, you know, as of, you know, this recording. And so, buyer's remorse, that seems to be the buzzy term around Arkansas right now. And I get it. You paid a lot of money for John Calipari. You're paying him more than you were paying Muss. And Muss actually took you pretty deep in the NCAA tournament. And with that type of salary comes expectations. And John Calipari is failing to meet those expectations. You know, I think the thing is, 10 years ago at Kentucky, he could just go out-talent the rest of the league. Just right. Go get a bunch of talent. You know, let the talent take over. Well, now everybody in the SEC has talent. Right. So, sure, Arkansas has talent. That's not the problem. The problem is that his schematics now and for the last several years have really kind of fallen behind. And so I don't know that he's able to match wits, X's and O's against coaches in the league that have similar amounts of talent anymore. And there's a lot of ways, you know, that he could go about it to try to fix that or remedy that. But he's going to have to get in the lab and come up with some solutions, because Arkansas didn't pay him all this money to come in here and, you know, hope for an NIT bid. That's, you know, it's not going well. It's not going well.
Yeah. And I really wonder, I saw another article, another spot online that there was coaching some SEC coaches is saying that, you know, that really his system is outdated. And that one coach said, you know, we don't fear John Calipari anymore. We step on the court with him. And I wonder right now, 5 years, can he get through 2 years at this point? I think if, you know, you may get the 1 year as a grace period. If you come up next year again and you're, you know, 16, 17 wins and missing the tournament, I don't see how he survives after that down there. But back-to-back years like that.
Yeah, that's tough.
Coming off what Musselman did in his 5 years.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, by Eric Musselman's second season, he had Arkansas playing into the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. So yeah. if you don't even make the big dance, which seems it's highly improbable at this point that Arkansas is going to make the NCAA tournament. I mean, what are the chances that they can dig out of an 0-5 hole in the SEC, come all the way back in this league? You have to get to at least 7 wins in the SEC to make the NCAA tournament. Now you're without Boogie Flan. How are they going to get to 7 wins? So they're not, I mean, barring a miracle, they're not going to make the NCAA tournament this year. So then what is the pressure going into next season? Not only to make it, but yeah, to make a run. It's off to a horrible start. And fact of the matter is their football coach has to have a good season next year as well to save his job. So you're the AD there at Arkansas. You're like, we got a football coach who's kind of barely hanging on. And then we could be going into next season with a basketball coach that's under scrutiny, that's going to have a buyout in the exorbitant range. I mean, it's tough. It's a tough situation there at Arkansas. And you can't just say, oh, well, he'll go out and get some McDonald's All-Americans. So what? Rob Dillingham and Reed Shepherd were phenomenal. Look how far I got Kentucky in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. You know, so it's, I don't know. I mean, there's, I think you need some fresh schematic energy. Go hire an assistant from the Nate Oates tree or something to reinvigorate and sort of modernize the way that you play ball. Because from a talent perspective, he's still going to get players. I don't doubt that. Look at his track record of placing guys in the NBA. That's going to be attractive to high-level players. But he needs somebody to kind of come in there and hold his hand and walk him through some of the schematical things that need to change. And, you know, he's a prideful guy. He's a national championship-winning coach who's had a lot of success at a lot of places. I don't think when you're in your mid to late 60s that asking for help is a natural thing to do. But if he wants to salvage this thing, he might have to do that.
Yeah, so many things that they don't do well. I mean, simple boxing out. I mean, it is, you know, they got rebounded. They get out toughs under the boards. There's a lot to fix down there. You're right. Something's got to change. I want to go to the Big Ten right now. Last weekend, a big game up in Michigan State. The Spartans beating Illinois by 280-78. But the big coming out of that was the All-American, possible All-American freshman, Kasper Jakaciones, fouling after only 9 minutes. Never got a chance to see him play. The nation kind of wanted to see this guy. A couple of fouls are questionable, but I guess my takeaway with this Illinois team is that you almost beat a streaking Michigan State team on their court without KJ. You only lost by 2 points. And it seems like Illinois almost won in the nation's eyes while losing.
Yeah, Illinois is, they're a problem. They can be an issue for the rest of this country come March because they're still growing and gelling together and they're so young. You got 4 freshmen playing key roles. And you look like on a given night the best team in the Big Ten. So it's they're scary because they're not going to be a 1 seed in this tournament, but they're as talented as anybody, and they've shown the flashes of brilliance. To me, the Illinois is kind of like AI. It's this young fledgling thing that we're not completely sure what it's ultimately going to evolve into, but we know it's got a lot of potential and a lot of talent. I would equate Illinois to NVIDIA stock right now. That stock price is going up, and we're like, we don't really know exactly what the end game is here, but you know, there's some rocket fuel attached to this thing, and that's kind of how I feel about Illinois. It's like, you know, this is a fledgling sort of new thing that's going on here with Brad Underwood, and but it's got the potential to be electric, and it's kind of like I kind of look at Illinois and see. Remnants of UConn's first title team where they were awesome, blowing the metrics out of the water. But then they went through some bad losses and it was, you know, it was a little herky jerky there. But boy, when they got it clicking in March, they were just outright dominant. And I wouldn't put it past Illinois to kind of go through a similar evolution here. So yeah, it's the Big Ten. It's going to be tough. You can take some losses here and there, but yeah, Jakaciones is elite. I love the flashes I've seen from Will Riley in that Michigan State game in particular. He was really fun to watch. Got it going. He got cooking, and he was tough to defend. And then you think about a guy like Kylan Boswell and his ability to kind of turn it on and orchestrate that whole thing. And so, yeah, he's got some interesting pieces there. I like Illinois. I'm very fascinated with kind of where they're headed.
Yeah, and I think for Illinois fans, the thing is they haven't played a great game yet. Like they had the record blowout at Oregon, record blowout at Indiana, and yet you watch, you still feel there's still more there. And I think that's the fun part or frightening part, if you will, because there's still more that they can do. I want to get your thoughts earlier this week before I let you go on UConn's coach, Dan Hurley, and the comment that he was, you know, the audio was too close. He told the ref, don't turn your back on me. I'm the best blanking coach in the game. He threw the tantrum. Literally in Maui earlier. Is the pressure getting to him, or is this just who he is? He's kind of the Mike Krzyzewski 2.0 when it comes to his sideline antics.
You know, he's not wrong when he says he's the best coach in the game. He's won consecutive national titles. I mean, love him or hate him, that's just the cold, hard truth. He's won back-to-back national championships, so it's hard to say that he's not the best coach in the game. Now, I understand why his antics are rub people the wrong way. If you're not a UConn fan, you probably don't like him very much, and I think that's understandable because he's dominating the sport. He's doing it in a very brash and prideful way. he's the villain. He is the Coach K, you know, in terms of the guy that everybody's going to love to hate. And yeah. I think he probably struggles with that a little bit. If you watch his post-game press conference, you know, after that win against Butler, he's saying, well, I wish the camera would show the other guy. Thad Matta was yelling at the refs too. Come on now. We've seen Thad Matta in college basketball for what, 25 years now? Yeah. There is no comparison, Dan. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sure he may have said a curse word at some point to a referee at some point in time. But like, if you're trying to equate Thad Matta's sideline antics to yours, like, bro, I mean, come on. Like, it's crazy. But I think it's probably good for college basketball that you have such a polarizing figure that is so demonstrative and yet so successful. I mean, you know, he makes people feel emotions. And he's anything but milquetoast. And to have somebody, you know, so prominently featured atop the sport, who is such a polarizing figure, who, you know, you're probably going to turn on First Take in January and actually get some Dan Hurley, or turn on Pardon the Interruption and get some Dan Hurley, get some college basketball. That might be the one thing that's not NFL related or not Jimmy Butler related. So yeah. If it gets college basketball into the you know, the talking space a little bit, all right, like, that's fine. But he's nothing if not entertaining, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, and we don't have the Krzyzewskis, the Jim Boeheims anymore ranting on the sideline. There's a void there. And so where are you going to look first? The guy who has two rings on his finger, right? I mean, that's the first place you're going to look. David, we have taken up so much of your time and you got to get going. We appreciate your time as always. Enjoy the games and enjoy that sweet little girl. And we'll talk with you soon.
Okay, Larry, thanks.
Appreciate it. David Cobb, once again, he's with the CBS Sports, a college sports writer, one of our favorites. Give him a follow and make sure to check out what he's doing on CBSSports.com. All right, stay with us. We have much more to come right here on The Big Show. NFL down to its final four, but fellas, first off, let's talk last week and second week in a row, I think. Producer Tony was saying that I won the picks.
We're not worthy.
Wow. That is maybe the whole suit thing, the suit and tie thing, it pays works. Off.
It's yeah. paying off.
This is another stolen week of picks. I think there's a conspiracy. There's somewhere behind the scenes.
Well, in the last 2 weeks, Larry's won more pick weeks than Mike has in 2 years.
I don't know. Did I win last year? I can't even remember.
It's possible. You know, well, I took the Commanders because I just thought there was a chance. You guys, I don't want all of our picks to be all the same. I think Dan Quinn's a very good coach. I think that Jaden Daniels is just a special quarterback. Now, let's be honest. None of us thought that would happen. The Lions were, it's just amazing. Go through and win, lose only one game in the regular season and yet come out like that. What is it about teams and buys this year? We saw college football, the bye didn't help you. And it certainly didn't help the Lions either as they were trying to break through and win their first ever, get to the first ever Super Bowl in team history.
Yeah, well, Jared Goff went colorblind and that was bad. I mean, you know, over the break. So, they need to keep playing to keep his eyes sharp. But no, it's obviously the break didn't pay off. I really think the Commanders are a team that I thought they were a year away from being where they were going to be, but here they are, you know, and I they've got tough sledding going into Philadelphia for sure. But impressive win over Detroit because the Lions, and to be honest though, the Lions, as we know, they so many injuries they have on the defensive side. And you can't lose that many. Five starters, and not only lose some starters, they lost their backups too. They had so many injuries that and it's tough to win that way.
Yeah, I think in the end, the injuries, they just got to the point where they couldn't compensate for them. And, you know, that it's unfortunate. But when you play a 17-game season and then you throw in additional playoff games, and soon we'll have an 18-game season, some of this is going to be the team that's healthiest is going to go further in the playoffs as opposed to the team that's better.
Yeah, there's no question. Another team that just gets snake bit year in, year out, the Baltimore Ravens. Boy, that two-point conversion. Could Lamar Jackson have thrown a better pass to Mark Andrews? It literally hit him right in the guts, literally right between the numbers. And yeah, yet
you got to hit him in a better spot next time.
Yeah.
Jackie Smith.
It was. Oh. That's exactly what I went to, Mike. Yeah. Same thing. And Andrews is a really good, great player. He's a great player. Had a fumble and a drop. Every guy has a bad day, right? I mean, it happens, and you're sad that it happened in that situation, unless you're a Buffalo Bills fan.
Yeah. I mean, and look, I kind of want to see the Bills win because they had that 4-year streak, and you wonder what would have happened if, you know, wide right, you know, hadn't happened at the beginning of it. Mm-hmm. But I think the Bills fans are certainly ones that have kind of earned an opportunity to win a title.
Yeah. How about the Bills Mafia set up a GoFundMe for Mark Andrews charity after the game? Raised over $60,000. They did this after they heard he got death threats. So good for them.
Yeah. Hey, and guess who signed with Buffalo in this offseason? No,
exactly. I don't know. You love me. You really love me. Guys, one of the most entertaining games I thought was the one in the snow, Rams and Eagles. How about the announcers calling this game over after the Saquon Barkley touchdown with like 4:30 to go? And the Rams come back in the final minute, get it inside the 20 before they run out of plays. I mean, they were trying to, Tirico and Collins were trying to backpedal out of that, but it's like, no. Yeah. You've already put them in the championship game. It's going to look really bad if they get this score.
Yeah, I honestly, once the Rams got down there, without the sack that happened there, I think the Rams would have scored. That was the one thing, even starting that whole drive, they had to keep Stafford clean on that one drive, and if they'd have kept him clean, I think they would have won the game. Yeah. And that would have been a huge, that would have been a bad thing for Philadelphia.
Well, and that's why guys like Bill Belichick have won so many games, because it's in the NFL, it's rarely the big thing. It's the little tiny things that win you the games, those small details. And that was a small detail that, you know, you have one less sack and the whole thing changes.
Yeah, no question. So we're down to our final four this weekend. Let me get your thoughts. I'll start with the NFC. Commanders at Philadelphia, a couple of NFC East teams going at it. Kind of crazy considering how solid the NFC North was. But Minnesota and Detroit, all those wins, so few losses, they're done. Commanders and Eagles, love this matchup.
This should be really fun. I think it comes down to, can they slow Saquon on one side, and can they slow Jaden Daniels on the other side? And I think Philadelphia's defense is older, more polished a little bit. So I think Philadelphia will come out on top, but I don't put it past. Remember when Joe Burrow was young and he kind of took the Bengals to the, you know, I think Jaden Daniels kind of like that. He's lightning in a bottle right now in this season. I'm not, you know, I think it could happen, but I'm going to go with the Eagles at home.
Well, as a Cowboy fan, if you would have told me 20 weeks ago that two NFC East teams would make it to the NFC Championship, I'd say, well, the Cowboys are one game away from a Super Bowl. Yeah, Jerry took care of that. Look, I think this is going to be a great game. It's Jaden Daniels. Can he play well against a veteran defense? Can he be the Dan Marino, you know, the rookie year that does so well? I'm excited to see him get the opportunity. Brad and I were on that bandwagon way early, and he has exceeded my expectations. So should be a heck of a game.
I'm a big Barkley fan. I'm a big fan of Jalen Hurts. Here's somebody who, again, lost his starting job at Alabama by injury, should not have. Goes to Oklahoma, almost has an almost Heisman-like season, has a lower pick to the Eagles. What he's done with them is somebody who was not a top pick. He's been amazing. But I'm going to roll the dice again with the Commanders, and Jaden Daniels making history as the only rookie quarterback ever to go to the Super Bowl. I'm going to take the Commanders. And a stunner.
Who did Mike pick? Did Mike make a pick?
He picks Philly.
I'll take the Commanders. I'm riding Daniels all the way to the Super Bowl.
Oh, you're going Daniels. Okay. All right. So we got two for Washington, one for Philly. All right. AFC, KC and the Sunshine Band hosting the Bills. Keep it coming, love.
You can't pick against Kansas City the way they play, except I'm picking against Kansas City. Go Buffalo, baby. Go Josh Allen. No, I just think we need some new blood. I think it's time to see Buffalo. They're due. Josh Allen's a great player. They beat Kansas City in the regular season. I think they're going to be able to score against Kansas City. Can they stop them enough? I don't know, but I think this is going to be a blast. I'm going to go with Buffalo just because I just want to see it.
Go Bills. I'm all for where's Marv? We need him to sing. I want to see the Bills get there and break the streak.
Would love to see the Bills get there, finally break through, but I just, Kansas City, they keep finding ways to win. They just know how to win. They just do. And they do. Somehow they do. And they're at home. And was it six straight AFC championship games?
Seven straight. I told my buddy Jay Price, Kansas City, huge Chiefs fan. He texted me, you know, go Chiefs. And I said, go Bills. And I won't say what he said back to me, but I said, it's going to be a great game. Be tough. He goes, I don't know about it. And I said, well, you have number 15. So that gives you a huge advantage.
Yeah. It's like having Montana or Brady. He gets it done. Hey, we're out of time. As always though, stay safe. Everyone, it feels like as no matter where you're hearing us, you're under, some kind of, several feet of snow. So stay safe and take care of each other. No question. Thanks to all of our guests who came by. Enjoy the games and enjoy the weekend until we see you same place, same station, same time next week. See ya.
This has been a presentation of LMBC Sports LLC and Revision Sound. We'll be back next week on Big Sports Radio Network.